Receiving our native people from Canada this morning. And my name is Larry Kimura, and I teach at the College of Hawaiian Language in Hilo, and I think some of you will be coming over for the Hilo field study. And these are some of our, my students and a fellow colleague here who also are all at the College of Hawaiian Language. And this one was at the College of Hawaiian Language. Mamo, and she taught there linguistics for 1 year. Now she's at the University of British Columbia in Canada. Leila ke ya aku nei mako ya oe ya uko na oibi o ka aina o kanaka ko mako o ne hanau nei o hua I nei I ke ka kaiaka me ke a aku nei o eko mako o aloha piha I ke ia hui ana kako ke ia aina ho io o ahu nei. Ke kiko waina o ke ia pai moku o hoi nei, no ko mea ma nei no, ka hope o ke ia no ana ko mako mau alii, a pa akula hoi ke au kuni ma moi. No leila, ke ia kakayaka e mele huana mako, ke ia mele, I haku ia no ka ho hano hano ana I ka ho na awao, e ho ahalike ana me ka puka ana ka laa, kai kina a hiki aku I kono velo ana I ka komohana a no leila ma ma o ke ia po malama lama ia ana I ke ia honua ne ka koe no hone pela ka ko e a o kuai ka ike I waiho ia e na kupuna o mako a pela no paha o ko no leila aloha nui ka ko ke ia hui ana
Au e kāwe nāo ke au I ka lani e reke reke I ka po o piri puka e ele leo ka po nipo ni I kina kau ke kai awana au I ta ala a papa la ia nei luna o ke kukuru o ka lani la o ka ui e huli alo nei ka ulu e
Sedih cerana anda, wakam aku tu wanis, wak penaji. Sedih masih dia harus nak kopi wak ini harus wak penaji. Wakam aku juga nak bisnis juga ni. Good morning everyone. My name is Eugene Alexis. I come from Alberta, Canada. First of all, I'd like to thank the Creator for a very beautiful day today, and the hospitality from our friends here in Hawaii. I'm very grateful to be here. I'd like to thank the Creator for bringing me here. I'd like to thank my leaders back home for allowing me to be here, my elders, and also our teachers, our school, our university. And I'd like to just sing a song, friendship song, prayer song, song of gratitude. before I do a small teaching, one is that we use hand drums. This is what we call a North American hand drum. These drums we use during the winter months. And back home, it's still winter, so we got snowed back there. We use these during the winter, and we sing. We call round dances when we sing. And when we sing, we put our spirit in the drum, and we ask the beat to carry to the Creator to hear us. So it's a spiritual thing, that when you sing, the drum beat will take it and bring it to the Creator. Creator will hear your message or your prayer or your thought. And by that, I'd like to sing a round dance song. I was born with a defect, but that didn't stop me from learning music. Beat, you have to represent the heartbeat.
Emotional for me to be back here. Sorry. I'm with a lot of people I know and love. So
could you speak into the mic?
Well, when I present, I will. I just wanted to apologize for my emotion. I'm very sorry. Anyway, I would really like to thank Larry and his team and Eugene for that really hard act to follow. And I'm really only here in the briefest capacity, even though I've probably run on a little bit, just to sort of lay the groundwork for what we're planning to present this morning in this session. I'd also like to thank the organizers very much for organizing this idea of a linguistic response to the endangered language crisis that we're facing worldwide. I think that a lot of us in this room, and I would like to think that my fellow panelists all agree, that there is a deep role for linguistics in that larger arena of endangered language pedagogy. And it's something that we at CILDI, we're going to be talking about the Canadian Indigenous Language and Literacy Development Institute a little bit, but especially one program inside CILDI, the Community Linguist Certificate. And that training that we provide, both to speakers and to future language teachers back in their communities, very much is formed by linguistics. But we need to be very careful, and this is sort of the point of the first two of these papers, that the kind of linguistics that we're talking about isn't what we might want to call old school linguistics. It's a type of linguistics that's informed by a more cognitive, corpus, functional, typological, interactive, multimodal type of ethos, where it really keeps meaning front and center, it keeps the usage context front and center, and it's that kind of philosophical perspective that informs our training program. So, in a nutshell, this is a little history about CILDI, modeled on ALDI. We're going to be offering courses for our 16th year. It's been a three-week summer program in Edmonton in the summertime, but we have offered CILDI courses down at the Tsuut'ina Nation. We hope to be doing that again. We have a program going down at Muskogee's, the Cree community, and Eugene's community of Alexis Nakota Sioux Nation. So we're starting to offer programs at the community level for various reasons. But in this panel this morning, we're going to focus on the intensive linguistic training that community linguist certificate students receive in two of the certificate courses that specifically address grammatical complexity, which is sort of the theme of this year's ICLDC conference. So one of those is the morphosyntax of Indigenous languages and sentence and discourse patterns. We had two banners that didn't got broken in transit, so we had a lot of this information listed on banners, so I'm having to read things that I wouldn't want to normally be reading. We teach a morphosyntax course, and we teach a discourse and sentence pattern kind of course. During this panel, we will elaborate both as course developers, in the case of Jordan Latchler and myself, the commitments, the philosophical commitments that inform the courses that we've developed, and what are some of the actual, what's the content of some of those courses. We then turn to two first-person case studies, one in a university setting. Dorothy Thunder will be talking about how her linguistic training has informed her Cree teaching, and the other in a community setting. So this will be Eugene Alexis talking about how what he's learned in the Community Linguist Certificate program has been translated into teachable lessons that he can use in his community. Here's just some pictures of CILDI. So here's the first talk, which I will kind of go through very quickly. So in this position paper, I'm going to be describing what I think many of us are regarding as a natural fit between linguistic analysis informed by a cognitive constructionalist approach and the documentary, descriptive, and teacher training work we conduct with speakers of endangered languages, especially the many oral and polysynthetic languages of the Canadian North. The central tenets of this approach revolve around the dismissal of universalist linguistics that elevate the import of structural aspects of language, or form, at the expense of semantics and pragmatics, or meaning, and at the utter neglect of context and usage, and what speakers actually do when they use language. The long legacy of structuralist linguistics has not only produced language descriptions that are incomprehensible to educated speakers, but it has inspired, if only tacitly, a generation of L2 curricula that are word and sentence based and often arranged in a somewhat graded and very decontextualized fashion. Despite the prevalence of immersion and TPR methodologies in the LT classroom, the linguistic phenomena that often inform the basis of these exercises are very much noun-centered. And this is completely at odds with, I hate to say structure, but the structural and sort of the use practices of these languages. So even in the absence of, we're dealing with oral languages, even in the absence of overt literacy training, there's a literary bias that continues to pervade L2 pedagogy. So let me give a little quick history here. We were approached by Canadian Heritage in 2006, so we being SILDI. They were very frustrated at funding over 30 years in the Canadian context, language revitalization programs that weren't producing speakers. And they wanted to see a training program that brought linguistic awareness to community-based language programs. And you know, this is what they wanted. This is a very familiar kind of laundry list. I'm not going to go through it. But this is kind of what we all want. We want an army of language activists, language workers in a community. And you know, the fact of the matter is most communities have one person who's usually tasked with all of these jobs, and usually with no training other than the fact that they're a speaker of their language, and they may have nothing much more to go. So this is a little bit of an autobiographical note, but so I was sort of tasked with putting together a program within a couple of months so we could get some funding. And the short-term goals, we knew that we couldn't teach linguistics and about language to non-speakers. So we really aimed this at speakers. And over the years, we see that the fluency of the people that present themselves to Sylvian in this program, they're more and more semi-speaker. So we are having to do that language teaching as well as linguistic teaching at the same time, which is one reason we are now moving more into a community setting where we have a nice mix of speakers. We wanted it to be very practical, hands-on, portfolio development. We wanted whatever it was we were doing to translate into, if we had only one person from a community, we wanted to make sure that they had the resources, they had the awareness of what was going on in their language to translate that to others. And by bringing folks in the old days to Edmonton in the summer, we were able to really build a network. And I think people who have come through the SILDI program, and there are many of you in this audience, the value of talking with others, people from other communities who have other challenges, other successes, is very empowering. Our long-term goals were, I mean, these were sort of my selfish long-term goals. I am a linguistics professor. I teach students. I want students to be far more socially responsible than the way I was trained. So trying to bring undergraduates and graduate students, sort of traditional linguistic students, into language activism and language documentation and the SILDI ethos was also a very important thing. And I'm happy to say we've also got some of our undergraduate students here today, and they will be talking at other sessions in this at this conference. So we're really trying to change the way linguistics is taught, and I had the opportunity to develop something with six courses. And that's a pretty tall order, and my mantra is always creativity under constraint. What can you do in six courses? We wanted to make sure that we handled the linguistics. We also wanted to make sure that we gave speakers, going back to their community, the resources they needed to do advocacy with their chief and counsel, to write press releases, to write grant proposals, and to inspire others to do the hard work that we all know is before us. So, where to begin? I started where I knew best, and I have been doing field linguistics in some Northern Dene communities for nearly 25 years now. And I knew in my heart that language was not necessarily something on a page, but it was what happened around a kitchen table. And what we all want is that intergenerational transmission that we weren't seeing. And, you know, the thing I had to fight for years to overcome from my own linguistic training is it's not about what languages have. It's not their structural properties. It's what speakers do with those languages. And I think I'm echoing exactly what Laura said in her opening plenary the other day, and you're going to be hearing a lot of echoes of those themes. Well, okay, so it's all about me. I'm a cognitive linguist. I'm happy to say it. What does that mean? I have certain core principles that inform the kind of theoretical work I do, the kind of descriptive work I do. And I think, I hate to say this, but I think just the way I approach speakers and language. Grammar is meaning. You cannot separate the two. Lexicon and grammar are an artificial divide. Usage is the starting point of everything we do as speakers. Intersubjectivity pervades grammar, right? It's how we construe the world, how we our take on things, the shrugs we do, the gestures we use. That is part of language. It is not paralinguistic. So how do we kind of deal with these phenomena as we go forward? I'm sorry, I'm just jumping a little bit ahead. I also wear a corpus linguistic hat, and that has also changed the way I look at language and the way that I wanted things to sort of fall out in our community linguist certificate program. When you have a corpus mindset, you know that there is pattern, and there is regularity, and there's irregularity, there's idiomaticity, there's stuff you understand, there's stuff you don't understand, and all of that is part and parcel of a language. And we know that there's no point teaching paradigms across the board because we have a lot of irregularity, that many constructional patterns are very much part of a genre, part of a speaker profile. Spoken language is always more interesting than written. It is where language is moving and changing. That is where we need to begin. And guess what? We have a lot of oral languages. So let's not worry about the written form, the nice paradigms. And I'm also a field linguist. So I knew about the imperative, and I knew that the kind of documentation I was doing was pretty multimodal. And so all of these kinds of things we've tried very hard to wrap into the philosophy behind a lot of what we teach. So let me jump really quickly ahead. Part and parcel of old school linguistics is this form-meaning divide, or at least the idea that the form-meaning pairing is somehow sacrosanct. And as long as you deal with that, you've done it all. A cognitive approach, a more constructional approach, is to say, well, yeah, that's a construction, that's a starting point, but I'm not going to label it. It's not necessarily an identifiable part of speech. It's not necessarily a noun. It's just a unit. And that unit is highly contextualized. It's a varying size. It's a varying analyzability. It's whatever the language delivers to you. Don't have preconceived notions necessarily. So for example, if we compared these translation equivalents between English and a Dene language, we see that I should teach Big Identity in a morphology class, but the other one I get to teach in a syntax class. This is an artificial divide that, you know, linguistics is slowly overcoming. if we think about the typical TPR type of exercise, you know, seems very concrete, very physical. Put the green pencil on the red square. Well, in an Aboriginal language of Canada, you would need an awful lot of morphemes to convey that idea. So, you know, you do this thing, handling a stick-like object. I'm sort of caricaturing a lot of different languages, but it's not an easy task. This kind of translation equivalent is a poor, poor starting point. We're not taking the languages on their own terms. So modifications I want to use, so CX is the way cognitive linguists or construction grammarians refer to a construction as the major starting point. So let me try to riff on that idea a little bit. And what we really mean by a construction is a construction with bells on. So a construction to the X, where X is a whole bunch of stuff. It's the content of use, it's the context of use, it's the construal, it's the subjective state of the speaker, it's conventional patterns that you just say it that way and you don't even try to puzzle it out. That's the way it is. What's going on in culture, what's going on in conversation? That's a lot of C's, and I always tell my students, oh, remember the four C's, oh, the five C's, oh, the six C's, I'm always adding C's. But this is the richness that is a human language. And this is the starting point, not the stuff you wait to the end to deal with. One final major point, and that is overcoming this other little equation where literacy is put front and center. Because we never get around to the really important things that our speakers need, and that is how to interact in their language. And I think all of us who've worked in communities know the problem we run into when we start working on orthography and how deep or how shallow or, you know, syllabics, Roman, what system do we use? As soon as you put language to paper, you know you've done a very political thing and you pissed somebody off. So keep away from orthography. But on the other hand, part and parcel of being a linguist is taking language offline, putting it up, so to speak, slowing it in its tracks, and finding some representational tool. But don't obsess over the tool. And what we really need to do is reverse this and put sociality first and remind people, and we think we do that in a lot of our exercises in the Community Linguist Certificate, that we really need to develop skills for the phatic in language, right? P-H-A-T-I-C. What is emotional laden? What is point of view? And so a little exercise like this is a way that we get everyday language down on paper that speakers can work on and practice, etc. So one of the other little techniques we use is whole text like this Goldilocks story, which we'll be seeing in just a moment. But I think more than anything else, we try to convey a very relaxed attitude about language to our linguistic, our community linguists in training, that language is living. If it's not living and changing, it is dead. So embrace the variation, embrace the simplification. Languages change over time, that's okay. You know, languages don't do everything. Sometimes the body is doing signaling that is not in the speech. Languages aren't literal, they can be redundant, they're sloppy, they're messy, they leave things out. That is okay, no two languages alike. Every analysis is a work in progress. Not any one person knows the right answer. It takes an army. And I think I'll just end it there. A good sense of humor helps. I think that is front and center in nearly everything we do. And we have to collaborate with one another. We're still learning as we go along. Anyway, these are the courses. These are the two that Jordan will talk about in the next session. So thank you. And I'm out of questions. I have no time for questions.
Sorry, since we're running a little behind, maybe we'll hold questions till the end of the next presentation.